A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, welcome to the 410th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Christina Archer. Check out her new course, Winning Director Treatments at Commercial Directing Film School. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we are talking about my favorite topic, and sometimes Matt's, pitching.
Ooh, but it gets more nuanced than that. We're talking about introducing yourself to other talent, other filmmakers, other EPs, the ins and outs of all of that.
Making connections,
how you present yourself and how other people present themselves to you.
So we're going to cover four different topics. We're going to talk about reaching out to talent, how we've done it in the past, how we're planning on doing it in the future. We're going to talk about when people reach out to us, you know, having a podcast, I think is one reason a lot of people reach out to us, but also as directors, filmmakers, screenwriters, producers, the various hats that we've worn, people do reach out to us because we are in the position to hire people oftentimes. The third topic is going to be about presenting ourselves to potential employers. Some ideas we have on how to present ourselves so that people return our emails. And a lot of that comes from us not returning other people's emails, right? Especially
sure.
You, Matt.
Sure.
Like you're really good at it. And then the fourth topic that you said will be your least favorite topic, mm-hmm. check-ins. Like, how much should you bug people after you reach out to them? And I feel like you're going to have a lot of opinions on this. Oddly enough, don't have a lot of opinions on it, but it is on my mind when someone doesn't respond to me, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk about it. This is an action-packed episode, Orin.
Yeah, we made an outline.
So we've got a lot of ground to cover. So we're going to jump into it in just a second after we talk about our Patreon, which is the place where you can go ahead and throw us a buck or two to show your support for the show, just like Christina Archer did. At the $20 level, no less, you get a shout out at the top of the show. We're going to plug your Instagram, your reel, and you know, whatever you want. That's a new bonus for people who have subscribed in the past or are going to subscribe in the future. So patreon.com/justshootitpod is the place where you can support the show. It keeps us going. It is it's truly essential if you want the show to continue going, because Lord knows if it was up to Orin and I to edit the show, it would be over by now.
But I do want to stress, like, if you are a patron and you want us to plug something of yours and we haven't mentioned you yet, please email us, justshootitpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And again, if you want to be a patron, patreon.com/justshootitpod. We'd love to see you there. Let's go on with the show.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Matt, both of us have been talking about this lately, reaching out to people and being reached out to. But first, I thought this topic of reaching out to talent is something that applies to pretty much every filmmaker slash producer in the business, whether you're making features, whether you're making TV shows, whether you're making commercials, whether you're making a short film.
So starting with bullet point one, through an agent. This is the thing that I think people are probably the most familiar with,
Simultaneously familiar with and scared of.
Vaguely aware of. But here's the thing about it. Not all reach outs are created equal. And especially in the world of agencies, there's a big difference between cold, just like reaching out, checking avails, which is what we've talked about on the show before, but like you know, someone on your team or yourself reaches out, checks avails, hopefully with an assistant, so it's like not intimidating. Like, hey, is give me an actor, or is Tom Cruise available? Right? Tom Cruise is a bad example because he's not. He's only doing his own movies.
What about is Dax Shepard available?
Great. Perfect. Dax Shepard. Yeah. So Dax has, maybe he has a window, or like you say, oh, we're looking to shoot in these dates. Is Dax available? No, he's busy podcasting and he has a TV show and blah, 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 blah. But let's say that he is available. Then you could send your offer, right? That is the least likely to be taken seriously because there's no warmth. There's no heat to the connection. It's just like we reached out. We sent him a letter, Godspeed, right? I've done that many, many times.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like so much context around that. Like if you are a person that won Sundance and you're reaching out with $1 million offer, it's different than available and making my first feature.
SAG scale. Yeah, exactly. Well, and so that, you're right. There's a lot of context, but like building off of that's the floor. Right. That's the least likely to get any sort of attention.
And can I ask you, have you ever actually been the person making the phone call to the agent?
No, I have not. Yeah.
Me neither. I've never called an agent. The closest I've done is I've
been next to a phone call. You know what I mean? You'll be like, well, let's just check. And someone will like pick up the phone and make the call. It feels old fashioned too, right?
Yeah. I've emailed the manager that I know and said, hey, you know, one of your clients would be right for this thing I'm directing. Do you think she'd be up for hearing about it? Mm-hmm. But that I've never done the like, hey, Mr. CAA or Mrs. CAA, Miss CAA, like, can I please know? Yeah. Julia Roberts' availability for next month.
Right. So what you're getting at, that is actually like further up the scale in what I'm describing, right? So like if your casting director has relationships with the people, has cast this agent's clients many times or has some sort of clout or reputation, that changes things. Same thing with producers, same thing with your pedigree if you are coming out hot. But also I think the thing that maybe is the most meaningful is when you are repped at that agency as well and the agency is excited about the project, right? So that's very different.
That's like a huge Yes, that's a huge leg up.
Right? Yeah, right. And look, like, I don't want to be defeatist to anyone, but like, you know, now we're talking about really getting things going. Like, if an agency believes a movie is real, knows that it's financed, all agencies have a weekly meeting of some sort wherein all of the agents or all of the managers, every organization has to basically bring up these things to each other so that they have an ability to communicate with one another. That's like the value of an agency rather than just a bunch of lone mercenaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, if someone from that agency is attached and they can start getting into packaging or things like, you know, like putting things together, quote unquote, or if the agency reps the film for sales, now you're cooking with some gas and you can get some stuff going. And then what ends up happening is perhaps the person that you originally were hoping you were going to cast is available and interested, or they're pitching you on other clients.
One thing that you mentioned in this conversation was that if you have a casting director that has mm-hmm. cast from this mm-hmm. agency before, does that mean you have to have a casting director to be calling these Hollywood agencies?
Well, I can speak from personal experience. Certainly I've had casting directors do all of this before. That's the reason I haven't done the phone call myself, right? Or in the case of the current feature that I'm on, producers are doing the heavy listing of our four primary leads. And so
making the offers.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing that partially because it's just like, it's just still a little early to bring in a casting director. In this case, a casting director is going to be really helpful in filling out roles with less screen time that, like, you know, frankly, they have a better knowledge of, like, who's up and coming, who's really exciting, people who've kind of fit that category. The people that we're going after are not namey in the way that, like, an A-lister is a namey name, but, like, you can do the legwork yourself of, like, oh, what comedy TV shows are on right now that, you know, have this type of person, this age, this demographic, all of that stuff. So it's like pretty easy to just do ourselves, and frankly, I would rather do. But let me ask you, Oren, have you ever gotten, like, the list back? Like, oh, this person's not available, but have you considered these clients? Has that ever happened to you before?
It hasn't really happened to me with... It might have happened to me with talent back when I was doing my movies, sure. But that was, like, so long ago. But it has happened to me with crew, like, mm-hmm. If I'm, you know, flying somewhere and we got to hire a DP and we call basically mm-hmm. the best agency in Toronto and say... Mm-hmm. Here's the project, which DPs are good for this. And we'll be like, ooh, we want this DP. They're like, oh, well, at your budget, you can't get this DP, but we got this right. other DP. Right. So I've had that with talent. No, I mean,
DP and talent are kind of, it's horses of a different color in that, like, I think it's easier to see a DP and be like, oh, this person's good and versatile and, like, maybe not what you were picturing look-wise, but you can, it's easier to get there together.
Mm-hmm.
With talent, I feel like you get these names back and you're like, you guys don't, you didn't read this script. You don't know. You just sent me a list of men who are 25.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those lists, I mean, I don't know. They're, it's like when you decide you want to make a movie and you start talking about, like, you know, should we make it in LA or London? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so preliminary, you know, like it's not like serious stuff. I think when you get that list, I do wonder about this casting director thing though. Cause I think a lot of people, especially making their first feature and they're maybe not in LA and they are trying to attach some talent, think like, oh, we just need to raise $5,000 so we can get mm-hmm. a casting director for a mm-hmm. week to, mm-hmm. just advise us on what to do next and make some offers and help us out. Like, I do think sometimes casting directors do know, like, oh, this person's, sure. you know, is the yeah. lead on this show that's about to come out.
Right. Or they were just cast in this movie. It's going to take 2 years in VFX or whatever. Like, get them now. Yeah, that's true. Definitely.
But I wonder if, do you think, like, I'm curious actually why you don't have a casting, like, you don't think a casting director at your place in this movie is like an important thing.
I reached out to my casting director and we had a good conversation about, like, you know, she saw my deck and like the talent that I had pulled. And she was like, yes, I love these people. I'll take $5,000 from you if you want me to reach out to their agent. But like, at this point in the game, you can certainly do all of that yourself. And like, yeah, sure. She had like a few connections, but you know, if I was doing it solo, if I didn't have producers who also had these connections and personal relationships with all of the agents that we're reaching out to, I think it would be much, much, much more intimidated. But because the team has worked with these people before and gets their calls answered, that kind of does it for me anyway. You know what I mean? That's why.
Do you think it's important to have relationships with agents and managers like for this purpose? Or do you think it doesn't really matter? You need the actor to want to like it, the project.
The actor's the ultimate decision maker. And it's, you know, it's a complicated thing. It's challenging. And also, agents are gatekeepers. They are there to protect their talent from having their time wasted with material that's not up to snuff or not real or not going to get made or whatever. You know, like, the agents are there to like keep bozos away and also to get them great jobs, but that's kind of an equal measure. So like, it's nice that these people have that my team has relationships with these people, because we've already passed the sniff test, so to speak, you know.
Okay, cool. So that's through an agent. So how else can you reach out to talent?
Yeah. And so the next step is through a friend, which I think honestly is the way for a film like mine. And like our last film was See You Next Christmas. All of our namey talent, they were 100% through personal connections. And our casting director was wonderful and great. But like, you know, just to kind of do a low budget, you know, SAG scale essentially shoot, it was always a personal relationship that got our foot in the door and then got people excited and willing, right?
So can you give me an example of how you leveraged a personal relationship last time to get an actor?
So there's kind of two different ways to do it, and we did it both on these. There's the way of like reaching out through an agent and simultaneously back channeling and saying like, oh hey, can you let so-and-so know, give them the heads up, we just reached out to their agents. Can you tell them that I'm not a wackadoodle and that this movie's going to be good? I'd really appreciate it. And they just, someone can simply forward an email on, right? Saying like, oh, hey, Matt's great. You should, I love him. I hope this works out. Done. Or you can ask for an introduction without the agency. Basically, you could reach out and say, hey, I think this person is right for the movie.
Yes. I know you've been hanging out with Tom Cruise.
I keep seeing your Instagram.
You're in the same couch store.
Either you're really good at Photoshop or, yeah.
When you send an email to a friend or a text or a phone call, is there like a certain way that you think it's best to ask for this intro? Or is it just dependent?
I think that I accidentally said it earlier. 30 seconds earlier, making it something that's easy for them to forward along, right? And that, in this case, it's kind of literally like writing something that they can forward that is simple and clear. But really what I'm getting at, the root of what we're trying to say, is that like, even for a friend, and maybe not your actual best friend, but like anyone other than like someone who's working on the movie or like a real go to the mat for you friend, you should just make it literally as easy as you can fathom for them to get it done. Because people with good intentions have all sorts of reasons why they won't be able to come through for you. Like, they don't want to feel awkward. They don't have time. It slips through the cracks on an email. you know, in their inbox or whatever, they're busy, they're on set. It needs to be as simple as, oh, bing, my phone, skim it. Oh, Matt could really use this favor. Forward, done. Path of least resistance is the way to make it happen.
And also, like, I think sometimes I get nervous about asking for people to vouch for me. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing I do is if whenever my wife, she's an actor, whenever she gets an audition, I ask her if she knows who the director is. And if it is a director I know, a lot of them maybe are past guests on the podcast. I'll just send a note. Hey, Maggie Kiley, my wife is reading
heads
for
up,
a role.
Wife's reading for you. Yeah.
For you. Just putting in a good word. I don't know what to say. Sometimes I say, like, you know, I think she's a fantastic actor and she like has always made my life way easier when she's on set. She's collaborative and funny and professional. You're just kind of given like a little bump, just like tipping the scale by like 1%.
You're just literally like putting a highlight on a name. Let me ask you a tough question, Oren. Mm-hmm. Your wife.
My wife.
The mother, your wife, the mother of your children.
Yes.
Your number one. The person you would go put yourself out on a limb for the most. Mm-hmm. Have you ever hesitated pinging a director that you know she's auditioning for?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And why? Right. Because same. We're in the same boat. Like,
it kind of depends.
Do I know this person well enough? Mm-hmm. You know, that keep going.
Yeah. It depends. That's why I try to not ask for anything. Like, you know, I'm a director and I don't cast my wife sometimes when she's not right. Like, I never want to put, I guess maybe it's selfish because I don't want to be in a situation where I'm like, hey, Matt, you should cast Kara for this thing she's auditioning for that you're directing. And then you don't cast her. And then
we're... I've cast Kara twice, Oren.
Yeah. And I asked you to not cast her that second time. And you can.
How many times have you cast Chrissy?
Me? I've tried to cast... Dude, I don't... you know, I don't cast redheads. No, I don't, but I actually haven't even cast Kara in anything.
I got you off track. But so yeah, there's a calculus to it is the point that I'm trying to illustrate.
Right,
I'm
right.
Not trying to put you on blast. Right.
Yeah. Like, and what I was going to say is like, if I like, Matt, you got to cast Kara. She needs her health insurance days or whatever it is. Like sure. Some stupid unrelated reason to your project. And then the next day I see you and it's like, oh, who'd you end up casting? Oh, you didn't cast Kara. Like, even if I don't say anything, I'll feel the like the sure. awkwardness of it. And so that's why I hesitate to ask for favors. But I do say, like, I mean, she's auditioned for Jordan Brady a couple times. And I'll always be like, hey, Jordan, my wife's going out for your commercial. Right. Tell her, you know, tell her hello for me if you see her or whatever. You know, and it's like, I just try
tell
to be
her, come
subtle
home
about
soon.
It.
The kids miss you. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So all of which, the reason I ask you about that is because same boat, right? Like, you always have to consider it every single time. And we're talking about the people who's in careers we are the most invested in, right?
Yeah.
And so imagine if someone was asking for an endorsement or a connect or a shout out in some way who you weren't married to,
right?
It just becomes immediately that much more fraught, right? So unpacking that, it's like, yes, I can vouch for this person, but like, are they right for it? Do I know this person well enough? Is this appropriate? You know, all of those things are calculus. So the best you can do when you're asking for an introduction is to keep it as literally as simple, as seamless as possible.
Right.
So that there's none of those caveats or road bumps, roadblocks ahead.
Yeah. So simple, to the point, honest, and not fluffy, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. Like the language, like, you shouldn't patronize or like be like, oh my God, you're such a nice person. I loved your cheesecake you brought to my party. And can you please introduce me to Julia?
Which is funny because it's not on our list, but it's worth mentioning. We talk a little bit about love letters in the, when you're reaching out through an agent, you send a letter that says, dear Tom Cruise, I thought you were so great in Risky Business. What have you been doing since then?
You looked so tall in that last Top Gun movie.
Yeah. But, you know, you write like, you know, this aspect of the performance that is so great. And I'd love for you to bring this to this character. And, you know, you really kind of talk them up. And I remember writing an offer letter and my producers being like, hey, you gotta juice this. You gotta, you know, be more romance them a little bit more. And I think that.
And did you agree?
Yeah, I agreed. I didn't. I was true to myself. People can smell a lie.
Right.
Falseness. There's a time and a place is what I'm getting at. And I think that I tend to go cut and dry, really, really to the point when it comes to these things. Mm-hmm. And that discipline or habit, we'll say, doesn't always serve me. Sometimes you do need to be like, oh, you were incredible at this.
Yeah. I do think people like specific compliments. And you know what people don't like? Is unspecific compliments.
Broad compliments. Oh, I love your podcast.
Yep. We'll get to that. I know. We get that all the time and drive me crazy.
Really? Okay. Cool. I hope so. Tell me more.
You know, I used to work for this company called Window Seat Pictures. Mm-hmm. I get emails all the time like, hey, I love, and I don't, it's on my LinkedIn or something. I don't know how they find me, but they're like, I love your work in the aviation industry and helping people like find seats. Like, it's so, you know, I'm like, delete. I'm like, mom, stop emailing me. I don't work there anymore. Yeah. Anyway, so I do think if you have a connection to someone that you want to cast, it's really helpful. And the less famous they are, the easier it is to exploit that connection, right? So the third way that we had listed of how you can reach out to talent is directly, right? Is find them on social media.
DM them. Yeah.
DM them. Yeah, see where they like to get coffee and just happen to be in there, bump into them.
Well, that's stalking. That's number four. Not recommended. Okay. But directly / social media. Look, there's a couple things about this that I actually do like. For the most part, it's not necessarily my style. If you have friends that, if you're like, oh, I noticed that my friend follows them and me, maybe that's helpful. I gotta say, I miss Facebook for this reason, because Facebook used to be able to like help you triangulate who knows who and who's friends with who and how do I get this introduction. Now, social media is even less interpersonal, so it's a lot harder to figure any of that out and help each other out, which is such a bummer.
Yeah, in the business world, that's why LinkedIn is so successful. Right?
Yeah,
but now, exactly for this reason,
LinkedIn doesn't. Like a connection with via LinkedIn doesn't mean the same thing it used to mean. It used to mean like, oh, I've literally worked at a job with this person. Now it's still just straight up social media and you have to kind of figure out how they're connected. But anyway, the thing that I do like about the social media connection is that a direct cold call is active, right? So if you're, you know, if you don't have access to producers who know agencies or whatever, and you've got the gumption to just reach out to the actors that you connect with or whomever, you can just go for it. And if it doesn't connect, it doesn't connect. That's okay. But like you can move forward on things.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've ever directly connected with anyone talent wise. And I don't think, I mean, I've met people before, you know, that I'm like, oh man, it would be amazing if this person wouldn't be in something I made. But I don't, like, let's say I met someone at a party and talked to them for a few minutes, then like maybe if I went through their agent, I would be like, by the way, I just met Jack. He's awesome. You know? But yeah, it's tricky, but I do think triangulating these things is always super helpful, right? So you met someone at a party, you happen to have a friend in common, and you reach out to them through their agent, right? And you mention to that agent, like, hey, I just met, you know, so-and-so, Dax Shepard at this UCB show. You know, we're fans of each other's shows that night, and I'd love to, you know, see if he would be available for this, to check out the script.
Yeah, that's right. That's the sort of heat, rather than just like, oh, I love Dax Shepard's podcast.
Right. You know, you've worked with a lot of celebrities in like commercials and stuff, right? You worked with Red Eye, worked with Allison Williams, worked with Rob Briggle, all these people. Do you know if in any of those situations did you have to pitch? Like, were you involved in getting them at all, or were they involved in approving you in any way?
Well, commercials, as you know, it's a different deal because the price tag is significant, right? So, like, sometimes they have to approve. Yeah, they've had to approve me. But, like, they just get sent my reel and, like, honestly.
Or a treatment, maybe.
Or, yeah, whatever. Like, truly, I think it's more just like the Bozo test again. Like, oh, this person knows what they're doing. Fine. Great. Next. You know?
Definitely been on the multiple celebrities that sign on to do a commercial and they're like, now we get to choose. I had a book job with flights purchased already. And then last minute, the celebrity who was like, this is famous. You and I both know him very well, but he's not like super famous worldwide. Was like, I'd rather have my friend direct this. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think like when you say, oh, rather have my friend direct this, they mean my friend who is a director who has a very good reel also.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Not in a, but I guess the disregard is in the fact that somebody already worked hard to get this job.
Sure. And your relationship with the production company that's going to be producing it and your ability to follow through on post and all of that stuff is kind of a little up in the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, so that's us reaching out to talent. I don't know if this has been helpful to people. I think the takeaway is that every situation is different, and that if you just see someone that you love on a TV show that just won a bunch of Emmys, if you're like, oh, Jeremy Ian White or Jeremy Allen White would be amazing for my thing. He's so good in The Bear. And you think, I'll just call his agent and see if I can get the script to him. It's an uphill battle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Cause I wanted him for this MeUndies commercial that I was going to shoot. And
yeah.
He's in the Calvin Klein spot.
Ah, that's, he ruined that's, it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a joke. Anyway, but, you know, look, as a takeaway, I think the fundamentals are the same. And it sounds like maybe we're overthinking things, but like just keeping it as clean and as unpretentious and as streamlined as possible and easy on the people that you are asking something of is always the key. And frankly, something that I needed to be reminded of myself over and over again. I sent Oren an example of an email I was going to be sending soon. And, you know, now it's 2.5 sentences rather than 8. You know, you just have to stay disciplined on it. All right, next up, being reached out to by potential collaborators. It's easy to forget that we are also talent. You know, we refer to actors as talent, but also directors are pieces of talent, assets that help get something
made.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is something that you and I, for sure, having the podcast makes a big difference. We're very accessible. Like our email, you can email us at justshootapod@gmail.com. You can find us on social media individually. You can go to our websites and find our contact info, Mr. Matt Enlow and directedbyoren.com. And so people are like always reaching out to us, and we get a lot of emails from DPs, right? I get at least 3 emails a week from a DP. And a lot of times they're like very legitimate DPs, you know, that I'll be like, who is this joker? And I'll click on their website. I'm like, oh, you shot that amazing commercial, or you shot this TV show. And you're like, okay.
It always kind of bums me out because you're reminded of how many awesome DPs out there need work in the same way the directors need work. We're just kind of always trying to find the next gig.
Yeah. And so I guess for me, like I largely, like if a DP sends me an email, First of all, if they ask if they can like take me to buy me a cup of coffee or let's schedule a time to meet up. Like, I don't know why, but it's already kind of like a little bit of a turnoff. Because I don't, now you put me in a situation where my two options are to either ignore your email and not respond to you, which I feel bad about, or to respond to you and come up with excuses as to why I'm not going to go to, you know, Larchmont and have a coffee with you on like a Thursday at 3 p.m. Like right before I have to pick up my kids while I'm trying to finish this. Like, you know,
do you think like 10 years ago, maybe when your life was a little less complicated, you would do it more likely?
Yeah, for sure. And even recently, like right before COVID, I think, you know, everyone, I famously went to the Starbucks Reserve in Los Feliz like every day after I dropped my daughter off at preschool. And my deal was kind of like, hey, this is where I'm going to be. If you want to come meet for a cup of coffee or whatever, you can. But then I started meeting people, a lot of people that like wanted to pick my brain or whatever. And then the meetings would not end. And
your day's gone.
Yeah. I would find, like, I would feel like I'm interviewing them. Like, okay, so what do you want to do in film? And like, what do you want from me? And like,
Especially and, like as a person who has a podcast.
Yeah. I've already basically said every single thing I've ever thought in the last 400 episodes.
Probably a bit twice over.
Yeah. I think in general, like if I'm a DP reaching out to a director, I'd say, hey, I like your work. So I get a lot. Hey, I love your work. I'd love to, hopefully we can collaborate on something. Here's my site. Like, I'd love for you to say, hey, I love your work. Like this spot or this thing or that thing.
That
or
Pringles commercial.
The camera movements.
I had to look up who directed it.
Yeah. Like just give me something that makes that statement have any sort of backing whatsoever. And then here's my site. And your site should be freaking 20 thumbnails of things I can click on.
I mean, let me ask you a real question, Oren.
Yeah.
This is the root of the DP of it all. Have you ever hired someone who hit you up?
The long answer is probably, but what I've been doing recently is I have a document of people that like, so I'll click on their website. If it seems if
people ink, so you like, you've got your document. DPs is a tab on your Excel spreadsheet and you're like, oh, this person reached out to me.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's a note.
I'll reach.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I have like just literally all I put is the website. Right now I have six DPs listed on under this website. And I've met with three of them, like just to consider them for jobs that we ended up not hiring them. And then one of them I did hire.
Yeah. Because here's what I was getting at. I was trying to serve you up this answer. Is that like, we know a lot of DPs.
Right. Yeah.
And if all of my favorites were booked, everyone's off shooting a movie, I would probably do one of two things. I would either, and that list is at least six people deep, right? I'd either ask the agency or producers, oh, do you have any favorites? And they always do. Oh, I love this person. They're so fast. I'll be like, never mind. I'd hit up.
They own their own red Monstro.
Yeah, like, exactly. I'd hit you up and maybe a few other director friends who's, you know, I'd be like, oh, hey, Carlin, who shot this spot? This is so good. Or I'd be on Instagram and I'd be like, finally, this is my chance to reach out to this DP that I've always wanted to work with.
Yeah.
And also, honestly, I probably would then be like, hey, I know this director. Can you give me their email?
I do think like with DPs, it is a little bit of like an impressions game. Like, oh, I've seen your name like in seven different places. It's like they're triangulating us, right?
Sure.
So just that email doesn't count for much. But if they send that email and they say, hey, I work with this director that's been on your podcast, like that already gets you like 10 times farther than not mentioning any sort of connection.
I one up you, like, not just like, oh, I heard this director on your podcast. If we got an email that was like, oh, hey, dudes, I loved the conversation you had with my director on this thing. They were such a blast. I took a look at your work. I really love that Pringles commercial that you did, Oren. Keep me in mind if you've ever got anything like that. I'd love to do something like this. Here's my website. that's pretty clean. That's appealing, right?
That's great. Also, if you don't live in LA, it's a bonus. Like, hey, by the way, I'm an Atlanta-based DP, and mm-hmm. I also work in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And can work there as a local. Because a lot of times, that's when I'm looking for new DPs, is when I'm going to towns and I can't
travel
bring
jobs
someone
you can't bring up.
From yeah. LA. Yeah. So DPs, I don't think we need to go as deep into all these others, but we, for some reason, get a lot of emails from composers, and those are...
I truly believe that some school, maybe a couple of them, teach their composers to cold email every filmmaker.
But how, what would you do if you're a composer?
I have no idea. So it's a tough gig. Though, I will say, my composer, Philippe Pierre for Squaresville, who did a wonderful job and did incredible work, and is now has a pretty great career. He's kind of shifted. He's still in music, but I think it's more in the supervision realm because he's got great taste. Was a cold email. But that was also a web series where I'd never received those emails before. I was just flattered, you know.
And commercials, I never hire the composer. Like, maybe, like, if I got some giant commercial with, like, a long timeline. But the only time I've ever hired a composer is on a feature film or maybe, like, an episodic thing if you're directing, like, the entire show or something
mm-hmm.
or the pilot. But...
Yeah, I've had composers on like the CBS like prank show I did a few years back
mm-hmm.
every once in a while. But honestly, the problem is that like it's a lot easier, especially on like a 30-second spot or something like that, to just look through a seemingly infinite catalog of music and just pick the song that you like best. Rather than describing something that's ultimately going to be a little generic, that generic thing already exists on Premium Beat, Epidemic, et cetera, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, yes and no. It depends. If you're doing like an Apple commercial about how they have all these new features for deaf users or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's like a 2-minute long docu-style thing and you can score it with an orchestra, you know, it's there's a level. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can give your commercial the same amount of care that you would give a feature film, then you can use a composer. But in general, feel free to continue emailing me composers. I almost never listen to what you send me, though. I will say one time in the past year, someone emailed me, a composer emailed me, and I clicked on their site and it was just like 10 tracks. And one of them was about like birds in the forest or something. And, you know, I'm working on this, like the unscripted podcast. And I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. this song makes me think of things. And I sent it to my co-writer, Julie. And I was like, Julie, listen to this, like while you like read the scene, like this might like, cause we're thinking about audio a lot. I'm like, what if, imagine the scene while you're mm-hmm, listening to this song. Yeah.
But you know what
for the
life
of me, don't remember who that composer is.
Yeah. The, this is terrible to have to say out loud, but I was just watching a TikTok. God, I was watching a TikTok summary of a Vox article about how all creators have to quote unquote sell out, is the point of the Vox article, that you all have to be self-promotional and, you know, create your own media and market for yourself and all of that stuff, which is, I think, a topic that in the music industry in particular on TikTok is like quite pertinent, and I always see in my feed some version of this, of a take on this. But the most recent composer that I struck up a relationship with, I found on TikTok because he did cool videos with atmospheric great music, and I reached out to be like, hey, this is great, can I get a link to this for a sizzle I was doing?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his work was sick.
So put your work out there and email people, but putting your work out there is probably the best way to get people to come to you instead of you going to them. The other thing I get a lot of emails from is colorists. They always offer to like color something for me and I appreciate it, but it's like, it's just not, it's just hard for me to set up that session, you know? Again, it's like, I appreciate it, but like you're not pitching me something easy for me to take you up on. And then the other people that are like constantly reaching out to us are like people that are new to the business and just want to like pick our brains. Like I just got someone on LinkedIn just reached out and they were like, hey, I'm a commercial director. I was on the art class website and I loved your work. Like I'm wondering if I could like take you out for coffee and ask you like for some advice on like my next steps in the commercial directing world. And I wrote him back and I was like, thank you. I have no bandwidth for this. Do you want to ask me some questions here on LinkedIn? Yeah. I don't know. What's your like friend of friends or fans of the podcast or people are new to the business and they just want to get some advice? What's your move?
Yeah, I think it's all context, right? Like a friend who I've worked with closely, who's got a family friend who needs some help, or a person who's worked really hard for them, like a PA who's really trying to level up and break out, that sort of stuff. That's a sweet spot for me for sure. You know, I appreciate that the most. When my life was less complicated, I would do these meetings more frequently for sure. And, you know, sometimes have nice relationships where they would come and PA for me on a short film or things like that. Like it can be something really cool. And I think if you have the bandwidth, by all means do it. We don't, right? Like I literally woke up at 5:30 to write this morning and it is 11 o'clock now. And, you know, you've been working nonstop at the same time. Like
that said, if somebody does want a PA for me or even shadow me or something, like I'd be open to that.
It's right. Because of course.
It doesn't point is take much for me. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't take as much work for you. Going out to a coffee shop, you know, dear friends of mine I haven't seen. You know, like it's hard to prioritize that stuff. Yeah. And also, look, we want to help people. So that's part of why we made the podcast, you know?
Yeah. I'm always happy to respond to like a specific question, though. And yeah. We love getting questions on the podcast that we can respond to on the podcast, too.
Yeah, I want
to
make it a teachable moment. Maybe it helps other people out. I what's tricky is when someone's like, I really want to pick your brain. And also I cannot make the time to listen to a single episode of your podcast.
Right. But also
not that
like,
we want more listeners, but like, no, the reason is like, we're trying to educate people.
I mean, you know, I kind of always contend it's just like fun to talk to someone about filmmaking.
Sure. But if a person yes. can't put in the time to listen to one episode, then why would we be expected to put in the time to drive to a coffee shop and, you know, let them pick our brain for the same amount of time.
Anyway, if you want something from me, just email me. I will respond if I can help you. And if I can't, I might not respond. So, okay. Our final topic here is when we are on the other side of this yet again, when we are trying to pitch ourselves to be hired to get, you know, I think our first topic was about us trying to hire people that are really difficult to hire, like famous actors and things like that, right? The second topic is people trying to get us to meet with them. But this third topic is when we're trying to get people to hire us, some of the things that we go about doing. And recently I was talking to a friend who, when they pitch directors, they create, and I guess this is pretty common in the commercial world, but they create custom reels for the director, and they say like, hey, I can pitch you as a director that does animals. I can pitch you as a director that does comedy. I can pitch you as a director that does true crime. And they build these custom reels showing like 3 to 10 different samples of like what Matt Enlow has done with animals, or what Matt Enlow has done with competition shows, or what Matt Enlow has done with hidden cameras or unscripted or daytime TV or narrative sci-fi, whatever. And we always talk about how it's bad to say that like, oh, I'll direct everything, you know, and it's helpful to say like, I direct VFX and comedy, or I direct celebrity stuff. But if you do a lot of things, what's nice is if you can present yourself as like a person that can be easily, easily presented to direct these various things.
And what you're describing, I think, is kind of like a very broad use case, right? Like there's the umbrella of like, oh, I'm a comedy director. And then under that umbrella, there's sports comedy, action comedy, dialogue driven comedy, dry comedy, character driven comedy, punchline, right. Whatever, you know. And so I think that it's handy to for a person to repitch you to be like, oh, Oren's perfect at X, Y, or Z. The prerequisite, though, is that you have to have a body of work, right? when you're saying, oh, you know, I can be your action comedy guy, you better have like a handful of sick action spots in order for it to make sense to have that as its own reel, right? Versus animals, versus dialogue-driven comedy, or whatever it may be, right? It's not aspirational, it's proof. And right. So that's the big caveat with that. It's like, you know, you have to have been lucky enough to have booked the work and have your portfolio evolve over time to have that stuff, right? Certainly, when I was booking cat food commercials all the time, I got lucky with the first one out of circumstance, you know?
Yeah, well, it was like the first one was like probably a comedy cat commercial, mm-hmm. right? So you're you're being pitched as a comedy director, and this one happens to have a cat in it, and now all of a sudden you're a cat director. I think there's a nice way to not say I'll direct anything mm-hmm. and I can do everything, but also say like, by the way, this is especially when you're pitching yourself to people that might be pitching you, right? Mm-hmm. Saying like, hey, here's how you could pitch me as a comedy director and here's how you could pitch me as a VFX director or something is a nice thing to do. I'm trying to think, aside from commercials, have you pitched yourself to be the director on anything in a while?
Yeah, I mean, aside commercials, like in the narrative sense, it has been a beat for sure. You know, I think a lot of the investigation of like, oh, can he do X, Y, or Z happens before the meeting, you know? It was up for a couple series not that long ago, but like they'd already seen my work before I walked in the door. And so there's not the occasion of like, oh, here's my, it just so happens that I work with cats. Like they're like, okay, well, we're bringing you in because you know how to do this stuff already.
Right. And your current job showrunning, you like sent them a resume, right? Is that true?
I did send them a resume. Yeah.
I guess my recent pitch, like attempt to get a director job was for that DGA mentorship, the TV mentorship that I ended up not getting. But one of the things that you need to submit is a 2-minute video about why you should get it.
Why you should get it, which is not unlike an interview, which I had to interview for this job for sure. Multiple right. times. I interviewed so many times.
So what's the balance between being thirsty, overly thirsty, like, hey, I'd be so good and we would be amazing partners and we could go have lunch every day and I know great lunch spots, you know, being like annoyingly thirsty versus like, yeah, I could do whatever, you know, this is no big deal. Like overly casual, right? Like there's a middle ground that you need to strike.
You do need to show that you want it. Certainly. Right. Like if you're too good for the job, that's a turn off for most people, you know, depending on there's always a vibe to people sometimes. But, you know, I think in most cases, like showing a sincere interest in what you're doing is going to be important. That's not thirsty, though. Right. Thirstiness is about trying too hard, going beyond the pale, you know, sending too many follow up emails you know. Wanting the job because you need it, not because you're right for it, is really what we're talking about.
Yeah. Which I think it's like so an air hard. Of, it's like the combination of like an air of desperation, like that you need this job really badly, combined with some insincerity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, exactly like the way we get emails and people, I love Matt. I'm such a huge fan of your work.
Sure. No, it's not Matt. It's, hey, just shoot at a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm such a huge fan of your work.
Right.
And you're like, okay, well.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to say. Yeah.
Yeah. The best way to email is just to keep things short, honest. But like you said, show that you're passionate at the same time. And so that's a balance that each person needs to figure out for themselves.
I know we're not talking about craft here, but it is an essential aspect of being a working director, right? When I got this showrunning job, I knew a strike was coming. I knew I had a brand new baby and a new mortgage and like needed the job because I need money to survive, but I did not act like it in the moment, right? And that is true for every pitch. Work begets work is a thing we've heard our entire careers, and it's real, right? Like jobs are different than like pitching. Pitching, there is a cool factor that you have to deal with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That unfortunately is part of the business. I think you and I both know directors who work less than they should or than their talent would warrant because they're not great in the room or... Yeah, because they're not great in the room, basically. Less charismatic or less, you know, nimble linguistically or whatever. They just don't pitch as well. And you know that their ideas are sick and awesome. And if, you know, if it was just about the reel, they would be booking nonstop.
Yeah.
And that their reel would be growing, you know?
Totally. On the note of like being tactful and being good in corresponding with people, like, What's your take on check-ins? Like if you know, as podcasters, we get pitched a lot of guests,
mm-hmm.
I'd say multiple guests a day. And we get a lot of emails like two or three days later, hey, just checking in on this. Would you like to book so-and-so on the show?
Mm-hmm.
Is that just, are you annoyed by it? I find it simultaneously annoying, but also effective. Like today, I think I forwarded you three emails and I said, hey, these people seem kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can have them on the show. Look, this so-and-so did this and this. And I would not have looked them up if people wouldn't have like checked in, you know, because sometimes when they send the email, I'm super busy, so I don't look at it. But then when they check in, I have some free time. So I take a longer moment to look at it.
Yeah, I think that the importance of a check-in email boils down to this. What value does the check-in give to the recipient? So in the case of when we are getting pitched a potential guest, the value proposition is very clear. You're podcasters. You need people to interview. Here's a person to interview. And so if that person fits the criteria of what we were looking for at that moment, and we realize that right in the moment, or if it falls down the email stack and like they check in to remind us about it, they don't really know that one way or the other. It's no skin off their back. I'm sure it's all automated. Like they saw that we opened the email and then they're following up. Then it's not annoying. Then they're solving a problem for us. If it's a person who's totally off base, not a filmmaker, for instance, somehow we ended up on a PR list for tech startups or something like that, you know, right?
Right. Well, what about, just to make it a little more personal, what if you sent a producer, hey, I have a script. I loved your movie that you did this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
I think mine is very much in your wheelhouse. Can I send you my script?
Mm-hmm.
No yeah. response for a week.
Yeah, great question. I've made every mistake, continue to make every mistake. I'm really grateful to have this conversation because it's reminding me of the core tenets of all of these communications that were hard learned as a person who, you know, lacks social grace sometimes.
No, all like, the time.
I mean, yeah, sure, all the time. Great. We've made all these mistakes, and that's why and I've seen how it works on every side of the coin. So that's part of why I believe the things that I believe, and hopefully this is helpful for people. But so the producer thing, it's tricky. If they're looking for a project, then you are giving them something that they need, a project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's right for them. If you have some sort of connection to them, they were on your podcast, or they were a friend of a friend, or even like, they made a movie that's close to yours, but different enough that it'd still be interesting in the right price range, et cetera, all of that stuff is helpful. If they don't need it, if the producer isn't looking for a project, or they're booked for the next 5 years straight, or the project is not something that they have taste for, this isn't something they like, you know, then it's kind of annoying, right? You don't have control over what people are looking for. You know, we have mutual friends who are great producers who I reached out to with my script, and they passed on it because they didn't like it, right? They didn't like the genre. Okay, next. Not for them. If you keep bugging them, then that's crossing a line where it's like, oh, that's not cool. So once you get that answer, take that answer. But you don't have, like I said, you don't have control over whether or not what you have is what they're looking for, which is the complicated answer there.
The other kind of check-in is just a little, the more casual, like, hey, I just saw this thing of yours and, you know, was checking in to see if we can work on something. I think those emails are totally 100% fine. Just don't be disappointed if you don't get a response.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think there's like this thing, especially in Hollywood, and you and I have talked about it a lot, like kind of these circuits of people. These are TV writers and these are like indie film festival producers, you know, feature producers, and these are commercial directors. And sometimes when you fall out of one for a while, you know, people stop pitching you for, you know, it's not that you're no longer a commercial director, no longer an indie film director. It's just that when we're making our list of indie film directors,
are you top of mind or not?
Yeah. Done a movie in 10 years. So he's not on the list. And so I think checking in does help keep you alive in these circles, even if it doesn't lead to anything. So I'm all for like checking in, saying hi. Like I love even on social media, just, I mean, on Instagram, what's funny is like, if you like someone's post, they will probably never see that you liked it. But if you like put like a fire emoji on it or something, then they will see that. And so sometimes when I'm like, oh, this is a person I care about and I like what they're doing and I want them to know that, even though they're just like a podcast guest or something, I'll just do that one extra thing, which is like, hey, just reminding you that I exist and that I think what you're making is awesome. Anyhow, connecting. We'd love to hear what you all think about emails, about connecting. We'd love for you to connect with us. You can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can find us across all social media. And you can listen to our unpaid endorsements right now on the podcast.
Unpaid endorsements.
The Academy Museum here in Los Angeles has, have I told you about this? They have family matinees, 11 a.m. on Saturdays. It is $5 a head in a beautiful theater. We took our daughter to see Little Mermaid, her very first theatrical experience. Little Mermaid.
The new one or the original one?
The original on a 35 millimeter print. It was filled with children. They were all in costume. Everyone was so excited. We made it through most of the movie. We've seen it before. It's fine.
Where is it?
The Academy Museum is right by LACMA, like just south of the Grove. So we actually swung by Republique and grabbed pastries at the window.
Oh, interesting. On the one on La Cienega or La Brea?
That's the only one? Yes, yeah, on La Brea. So they've got a little window where you can get just like coffees and like a few, like a croissant or like a few of the basic things. You don't have to wait in a super long line. It's their quick service thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we walked around the tar pits a little bit, went to the movie, perfect day. So that's, and like I said, $5 a head. If you were museum members, I think we spent $9 total on an original 35 millimeter print in a perfect, beautiful theater. It was wonderful. The Great Mouse Detective is coming soon, Oren, if you're so inclined.
Mm. Very good to know. I have some mice I need to interrogate.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I do not have exciting stuff. So, you know, me, I always go for quantity over quality. Let's go. Number one, Trader Joe's dark chocolate mini hearts. They seem so basic, but they're so delicious. Okay, number two, this is only because so many people told me it was good. I got into it and they were right. It's Fargo season 5. Juno Temple. Yeah, who is not from that part of the country. And she's really good in it. It's really, I love it because it's just like every character has a secret and they just slowly unfold and they're really interesting. I saw season 1, I saw like half of season 2, and then I stopped. And then just recently I was on set, multiple people mentioned, were like talking about season 5. So I watched it with my wife and we're like halfway through, really enjoying it. Ooh, I just remembered there's a new True Detective out that I haven't watched yet. Very excited for that. Third endorsement is to keep your eyes open for references in life. I'm like doing visual effects right now and Kyle McConaughey, he's a Just Shoot It listener, and I'm actually helping him out with some VFX for his movie. It's called Dead Male. It's premiering at South by Southwest. You know, we're talking about this shot where we have to add a skylight to a few of the shots, and I was just at a pizza place with my family and they had a skylight and I took photos of it. And it just reminded me like how important references are. Also explosions. I'm doing like some fire stuff. Like if you're adding explosions or doing things, just like find video of the things you're making and just, it'll give you so much to go off of, especially when you're trying to manufacture a fake version of something that is real. Anyway, find references in life. Keep your eyes open everywhere you go, especially like architectural and other buildings and the way people talk and stuff. I know it's obvious, but just reminding people. And then my last thing, it's kind of, it's not unpaid endorsement, just like a brag, I guess. But I have three spots running right now on TV. I don't know if I've ever had that.
Not bad, buddy.
I have Popeyes. If you see a woman crashing the wings party, she goes to a party where they have chicken wings and she replaces all everyone's chicken wings with Popeyes wings. That's my commercial. I also have a promo for the Super Bowl where it's a bunch of people watching the Super Bowl on CBS, on Paramount Plus, and on Nickelodeon, where we got to like fire real Nickelodeon slime at some actors, which is really fun because I didn't know this, but it's there's basically like an official Nickelodeon slime and the people that do the Nickelodeon slime. And that was really fun. And then if you're in Canada, I have a home equity bank spot running with a guy named Peter Mansbridge, who is a very famous newscaster in Canada. I had no idea who he was when I directed it, but it was, it's cool and it's on TV. And I was in Canada last week and I saw it on TV in my hotel room and I was so stoked.
Ooh, that's fun. When you see him in the wild, that's really fun.
Yeah. And my Super Bowl one ran during the Grammys last night.
Oh, cool, so, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, well done.
We'll have a very short shelf life. Sure. By the time this episode comes out, there'll be less than a week till it becomes useless. But what's cool about the Super Bowl this year is it is airing on Nickelodeon and SpongeBob is doing the commentary. Do you know that the Super Bowl is it's basically the only thing left that
for commercials
that many people watch on TV at the same time? No, not just commercials, like
as a collective,
the
as
only
a
event
culture.
yeah American event. So
well, I'll see you at my Oscars party, Oren. No, I don't throw an Oscar party.
Anyhow, we'd love to hear your thoughts on everything. JustShootItPod@gmail.com. You can find us across all social media at JustShootItPod. I'm on Instagram at OKaplan.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Unload. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by him as well, with additional production from Tyler Small. And you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.